Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three young boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our family's adventures at livelylittlecampers.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
In this week's episode, we share 8 tips for campground owners, whether they want them or not, and we are also discussing whether weekend trips are worth the hassle.
Our campground review this week is of a gem in Mid-Coast, Maine, Moorings RV Resort in Belfast. All of this and so much more on this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. For this week's feature topic, we're going to discuss 8 tips for campground owners. Now, over the years, we've camped over 200 nights, and we really love camping vacations. We love RV vacations. Our readers and listeners know that. So we hope the campground owners take this in the right spirit. We just have some strong opinions about things that we think work, and sometimes the small things really make a big difference, don't they?
Well, I think they make all the difference. Like we, if you know our blog and if you've read our campground reviews, you know that we love many of the campgrounds that we stay at. Most of the campgrounds. We very rarely have had a campground that we are just like, this is not a good place. And we realized over the years that it is actually the little things.
Not big expensive things that make the difference. Sometimes
it's the
small
little
things
that make a big difference. It's the everyday little details.
Things that campground owners could change overnight at no expense, some of them.
For some of them. And we've also noticed that maybe some of these things are like flying under the radar of campground owners. They may not understand the way these little policies or these little procedures in the campground affect families that visit. So we thought we'd spend the week talking about it.
So here's 8 tips. Here we go. The first tip. If you have certain campsites that are that have some unusual problem or some unusual location, we really believe you need to explain that to a guest when they're making their reservation so they don't show up and act surprised. Now, I'll never forget one time when we were camping in Maine on our first Maine camping trip 3 or 4 years ago. We were staying at a campground, and I walked past one of the sites that was unoccupied, and I thought, gosh, that is one of the worst campsites I've ever seen. It was right next to the cafe. It was in a place where everyone was walking right over the site, and I thought to myself, man, I would be really angry if I showed up and this was my site because it was in such a high traffic area. So then later that night, I was in the camp store. The campground was about sold out that weekend. And I was in the camp store and someone called in asking for a site. And the campground owner was on the phone with them and they said, "We only have one site. It's right next to the cafe. People tend to walk right around it or right on it. We just want you to know that." And I was actually very impressed. The campground owner took the time to say, hey, you might not want this site,
but if you really want a campsite,
exactly,
you're welcome to it.
And the
and
person
you can
wanted
come and
that
stay
site.
There. Right.
It was
and
a busy summer weekend.
I worked in the restaurant business for years, and I always relate it to that. Like if people call for a reservation on a busy night, you can tell them, sure, we can seat you, but you're going to be right by the kitchen. Or sure, we can seat you, but you're going to be right by the door. And some people really want to come and eat at your restaurant. And so they're like, okay, that's fine. And they know what they're getting. But if people made a reservation ages in advance and they show up and their table is right by the door to the kitchen, it's opening and clanging and pots and pans are banging, you're going to have a very unhappy customer who never comes back.
And I think 9 times out of 10, your customer is going to take that site and just not have high expectations.
Yeah.
It's all about expectations.
If you show up knowing, I mean, one example is the pitch of a campsite. Like if a campsite is very
unlevel.
Well, if a campground owner tells you that on the phone and gives you that courtesy,
you can bring extra wood. You can prepare for it.
You're like, oh, it's going to be unlevel. We'll bring extra wood. We'll even out our camper. If you show up and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't get my campground level. I don't have enough wood.
Right.
That's really difficult.
Yeah, so that you prepare your guest for any unusual aspects of the site. We think it's just great customer service when you do that. You might occasionally lose somebody who would take the reservation anyway, but so what? The people that come in are not going to be frustrated.
And you don't want unhappy people camping on your campsite.
Exactly. Okay. So tip number two, and this is something we read a lot of complaints about on online forums, and we just hear a lot of people complaining about this. We're going to call it the kid tax. Our tip for campground owners is to get rid of the kid tax. And what I mean by that is when campgrounds charge you extra for each additional child, sometimes it's $3, sometimes it's $5.
Sometimes it depends on their age.
Sometimes it depends on their age. And a whole lot of campgrounds actually charge extra for children. And Stephanie and I are going to call BS on this one because we really think that should be gotten rid of.
Well, their reasoning is...
The reasoning behind that, a campground owner would say to you, well, if you have additional children, you're using more water, you're using more electricity, you're using the facilities
right.
more. And that's all true. We agree with that. But guess what else we're also doing when we bring our three kids? What are we doing?
We're spending a lot more money on everything.
If you have a camp store that's stocked in any way, and perhaps if it sells ice cream,
yeah.
we're going to be spending five times okay. more money than anybody
our kids-
else.
Favorite thing to do when we camp is to go and get ice cream at the ice cream store every single
night. We kid you not. Forget ziplining, forget kayaking,
yeah.
forget hiking. Getting ice cream at the camp store is their favorite
yeah,
thing.
They live for it. And so fine. And we do that. They're traveling. They're good sports. They're great travel companions. So every night, pretty much, until like I lose my mind and I say, enough ice cream already. Like, Jeremy walks them down to the camp store and they get to pick out their ice
cream. And Daddy and Mommy are often more tired and end up drinking more coffee from the camp store.
Yeah.
And also, the boys do occasionally buy those, you know, oftentimes junky toys
well,
from the
camp store.
Well,
they save their money, actually. They've gotten birthday money or you know, at different times they've gotten money for different
things.
They
showed up at the Woodstock Lincoln KOA this summer with $50 each in their pockets.
Yeah, they decided that they wanted to save money that they had. And no matter what we said about what they could do with that money, they wanted to save that money for that trip that summer for camp stores. So we did not let them spend $50 in the camp
no,
store.
But they bought a $10 bow and arrow. They bought some of their own
yeah.
ice cream.
And not only did they do that, we played mini golf and we spent money
on
mini golf.
And guess what? Families with lots of kids are more likely to run out of milk, to run out of toilet paper.
To go into the arcade and to
exactly.
spend money on the games. In so many ways, people with kids use a lot of the campground facilities that are money makers. And, you know, we just feel that...
Frankly, we feel it's BS. Get rid of the kid tax.
Yeah. Don't charge us more because we bring kids onto your campground.
Yeah, it's also just the perception. I mean, people feel like they're being sort of picked on or taken advantage of because they have kids. And frankly, we live in a culture that sometimes feels unfriendly to families and unfriendly to people with children. And a campground is the place that you think of as being so friendly for families, being so friendly for children. Stephanie's making a face right now.
Well, I think he's being dramatic all of a sudden because I'm just looking at this as something that is like a little bit of a peeve and a bad business for people who do a lot of camping. So I would say more that I would consider the option to say we make up the money in other ways. We don't need to charge that $3 to $5 for kids, especially when I look around the campground at night. And people without kids are in their campers with the lights on and the TV running, and our kids are in the dark in the camper. We're not using electricity,
yeah,
and we're out at the campground.
Most of the time, the boys are taking a bath together. It's not like these three kids are just taking their own, you know, 10-minute shower. Maybe just charge extra for people with teenagers, for goodness sake.
Yeah, teenage shower.
Leave the rest of us alone.
We can change the kid tax to the teenage shower tax.
I think that makes sense.
All right,
okay.
We'll die.
Good. So tip number three, and this one we really like too. We recommend you charge one price for an activity pass. And what we mean by that is say you have a miniature golf course or you have kayak rentals. We think that instead of charging for each of those things as you use them, there should be the option to pay one reasonable price when you check in. Now, Stephanie, you feel strongly about this. Why do you believe in the one price activity pass?
Okay. I'm not sure if it's just that campground owners don't understand what it feels like to have five-year-olds or like, you know, before that, four-year-olds or three-year-olds that are so impulsive. So everything, and anybody who knows toddlers knows that what I'm saying is absolutely true. When they see something, they have to do it. And then 3 seconds later, they're done with it.
Like so, miniature golf for us.
Oh, it's like we come back from a long day of hiking and it's, can we, you know, ride those bikes, you know, the...
Kind of the banana bikes. The banana bikes.
And it's like they have to do that. They have to do that. And they will harass the living daylights out of you until you do it with them. Now, if you are on a budget and you want to set aside like, oh, one or two rentals or one or two games of mini golf, that's really hard because every time the kids see that, they are all of a sudden like so compulsively driven to do that activity.
The boys wanted to play miniature golf every night this summer.
They did.
And then it was 10 minutes or
less. But it's 10 minutes, right. A lot of the time.
At their age.
At their age, young kids don't sustain an activity like that. So it's hard because we're traveling. We're on vacation with our kids. The last thing you want to do is spend that time saying no, no, no. And so you're just like, oh, fine. Come on, let's go play. I wanted to play miniature golf with them whenever they wanted to play.
And then it's also, frankly, it's a little bit annoying to have cash on you when you're out of the campground. And always, you know.
Well, just always pay for that. It's right there in front of you. Sometimes it's like right around the corner from the campsite or something. And you're like, they're seeing it. You don't want to be saying no. So I'm not saying...
But if they
had
charged $10 for unlimited miniature golf, that would have been great.
We are not saying in any way that every single thing should be free in a campground. We understand that campground owners have to spend more money to upkeep certain
like a zip
amenities.
Line. You're seeing zip lines showing up at some campgrounds. We don't expect
that
to be free.
So we went to a campground in Niagara Falls.
Yes, Branches of Niagara. A terrific campground.
Family campground.
We'll do a feature on it.
And they did an activity pass for the week. And you could pay one rate. And for the
whole family.
I think they had a bunch of different options.
Yeah, they had different tiers, but I think you could pay one price for your family.
You could pay a fee and have unlimited access to crafts and rentals
Kayak rentals, zip lining, boat rentals, and fishing.
And just all of these different things that you could do with that pass.
It was fantastic for the zip lining and the kayak rentals.
I really believe that every campground, if you charge for something, you have to say to somebody, you can pay $10 and have unlimited access to the miniature golf course, because that would just make my life so much easier with young kids.
I think they'd also make more money doing that.
They probably would, because people would buy it and not use it that much.
A lot of people aren't at the campground. They're gone all day, but they would think, oh, okay, sure, let's do that unlimited pass.
Let's just get the unlimited pass. I think that's true.
Okay, so tip number four, which is kind of connected, ditch the activity bracelets. Okay, we do not like it when campgrounds make you wear a bracelet during your stay at the campground to use the facilities like the pool or the slide. So, Stephanie, do you remember any places where we had to wear a bracelet where we got kind of annoyed by it?
Yeah, of course I remember places. And if you talk to any of them, they're going to say to you, well, we're trying to keep people who haven't paid from using these facilities.
The locals.
And that's every single time that we've
talked
about the issue.
Which is a little disconcerting, frankly, too. If you show up at a campground, they're like, we're worried about, you know, why do we have to wear these bracelets? Well, we're worried about the locals showing up to use the pool. Well, okay, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But are you really solving that problem by sticking these plastic bracelets on my wrist?
You have to solve that problem in a way that doesn't involve me. That's my argument for that. You have to find another way to do that besides making me wear a bracelet. And again, this one might sound picky, but if you have young kids, you know they are pains about those bracelets.
They want them cut off every
night. They don't want them. And then one of the campgrounds we stayed at, you could like cut them off every night and go in.
The Jellystone Lorette this summer, they had a better policy. They said, look, if you don't want to sleep with them, cut them off. We'll give you new ones in the morning. And I appreciated that. But at the same time, I just didn't
I don't need one more thing.
To have to go down to the camp store every morning to go get the bracelets.
But how about
a Velcro bracelet with a Velcro tab on it or something that you can take on and off? Something like that? Or maybe a guest list at the pool?
Some sort of pass.
I don't know that we know the solution to this one, but it's not our job to figure it out. Okay, so for tip number five, stock the basics in your camp store. We were camping last Memorial Day, and we got everything ready for a nice barbecue. We did hamburgers, hot dogs, and right before dinner was served, we realized there was no ketchup. Now, if you know our kids, you know that they love ketchup a little bit more than mommy would probably like them to love ketchup,
right? I hate ketchup.
Mommy
which is probably
ketchup.
Why we didn't have it, because I probably like forgot it subconsciously because I
Max,
hate it so
Theo,
much.
Wes and Daddy love ketchup. Now Wes really loves ketchup. He put some ketchup on his pancakes the other day, but that's another story. So anyway, right before dinner, I decided to take a walk up to the camp store, and we were at Camp Taylor in Northwest New Jersey, which is a charming campground we've been to a few times. And I went into the camp store and
I sent you up there like, yeah. Oh, go get ketchup. Like it was never a thought.
I never thought that they wouldn't have ketchup. So I walked in and I, after looking up and down each aisle, and it's actually a decent sized camp store.
Oh, with lots of tchotchkes to buy.
Lots of tchotchkes. I went up to the counter and I said, oh, I'm sorry, I can't find the ketchup. And she said, that's because we don't sell ketchup. And my jaw dropped. A camp store that doesn't sell ketchup. And I said, why? You know, why don't you sell ketchup? And she says, we just don't sell enough of it to justify keeping it stocked. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, if you need to lose a couple bucks over the course of the season, could have ketchup stocked.
You don't need to lose a couple bucks. You don't have to lose it. It can be literally a part of your personal grocery shopping list as a campground owner.
Let me borrow your ketchup.
Right. You don't have to order it in bulk. You don't have to have 8 on the shelf. But you know what? Keep 2 on the shelf that even if it's not worth it for you to buy, sell at cost. Like, just buy it and sell it for the price that you bought it for.
I don't even mind the markup on something like that.
No, I don't mind the markup, but I'm saying, like, if you don't think you can justify selling it. Well, that's just crazy, because if you...
I would have paid $8 for a bottle of ketchup at that moment. I would have. And then I asked her, I said, where is the nearest store? Mm-hmm. And she said about 15 to 20 minutes.
Oh, sure. We were not
away.
Near
Camp
anything.
Taylor's out in the middle of mm-hmm. nowhere, and they don't sell ketchup. Mm-hmm. So campground owners, stock your store with those basic things that every camper needs and might run out of.
We think you have to have water, milk, bread, and basic condiments.
And toilet paper as well and things like that.
Yeah. And so a lot of those things are very shelf stable and they stay for a long time. And then the ones that aren't, you know, just don't stock that much. But it's really important. I think that it makes all the difference in the world. When we're staying in a campground and we know that we can run up to the store for something, especially with a smaller refrigerator and 3 kids. When we know that
we go through milk so quickly. It's like we expect a camp store to sell milk.
It just makes our experience much easier because we don't have to worry about it while we're out and about during the day.
Yeah, the best campgrounds do really tend to have very nice camp stores that are almost like little mini groceries. And that really should be the model. And frankly, those camp stores are making money. We know that they are. And that should be a way that they make really good money. And, you know, Camp Taylor is a huge campground. There's lots of people camping on there. So anyway, stock the basics. Number 6. This one's kind of close to my heart. Modernize your playground. If you have an older playground, we really feel like it makes a huge difference if you have a good quality modern playground. Stephanie, what do you think about this one?
Well, we camped next to some people on their first camp trip at a campground, which should remain nameless, that did not have any playground
the
to
playground
speak of.
The equipment was,
but it was
like
it was really weird.
Disassembled,
it had like taken apart.
Like the bars were there for the swings, but there weren't swings.
It was so weird.
It was like the shell of a playground.
But we had been there before, and we knew that, and we just loved the area.
Yeah,
and
we were there for the hiking.
We were there for a reason, and we were fine with it because we knew it. Again, if you know what to expect.
I would say that I wasn't fine with it, actually, to some degree, because our kids love a good playground.
We were not surprised, though. We knew this campground well.
Right.
So we were camping next to some people on their first trip.
And they had driven about an hour.
Yeah. And they said to us, we were like congratulating them. They had just bought their first RV.
That's right.
We were chatting. We were like, oh, that's so great. Did you have a good time?
Do you like it here?
And they were like, well, yeah, but you know, there wasn't really anything for the kids to do here. Like there was no playground.
A good playground can keep your kids occupied 2 or 3 hours a day.
Right.
Easily.
Well, and spread out over time. Like that's the thing about camping is that, you know, there's those critical points like after breakfast where you're cleaning up, you're getting the camper kind of pulled together, you're getting ready for the day, maybe packing your day bags and stuff. That is like critical playground time for your kids. Or you come back at night, you're making dinner. all or after dinner.
Or early in the morning. Grab all a cup of those coffee, times, you walk the kids over to the playground.
We enjoy that so much as a really safe space for our kids to get out their energy as opposed to, like, nobody wants them, like, running yeah. through campground sites.
I think it's surprising. There's lots of great camp playgrounds out there I can think of, but I think we're often kind of surprised at how many really nice campgrounds have really old playgrounds.
Old equipment. And we understand that that is probably a huge expense.
A bigger expense than we know with insurance and everything.
Right. But I think that it is worth it and it's valuable. And campgrounds with great playground equipment, it is the gathering place for the kids. And I have to say that was one of the best parts of the KOA in New Hampshire.
The Lincoln Woodstock KOA just had a rockin' playground.
Just the kids played on that playground.
3-4 hours a day.
All of the kids. I mean, just these swarms of kids were there at the playground.
It was big enough to hold that crowd.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they would all do these, like, ruckus games of hide and go seek and tag.
Yeah, I kept being invited to play the bad pirate.
Okay. There was pirate games, I guess, going on. So, but it was just such an amazing focus to community for those kids in the campground, and worth, I'm sure, every penny that those campground owners spent on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're looking to spend a little money, invest a little money into your campground, I would look at that playground first and just make a decision about whether you need to modernize or upgrade your equipment. I mean, it's basically a non-issue at most good places. But occasionally we stay at, you know, what is otherwise a great campground that just does not enforce their quiet time hours.
And the thing is it might just be luck of the draw because there was one or two campsites full of people who kind of got going late at night.
A campground owner can't predict who's going to check in.
We don't know if that's always the case at that campground or, you know, so.
But somebody needs to be there.
Right. And so that's why we think there has to be sort of a standardized protocol for just making sure that if you say your quiet time is from 10 to 6 or 10 to 8 or 11 to 7, that there is somebody who goes around every once in a while during those late night hours and just make sure that everything is at a reasonable
volume. And we understand
volume.
Campground owners tend to work really long hours from dusk to dawn practically. And it's not probably not an easy thing at 11 o'clock to be driving around or walking around. But somebody needs to be there.
Yeah,
you
a golf
need to be
cart, go
paying
around.
Paying somebody or having a staff member be there.
We're not going to pick up the phone and call and complain.
Yeah, that's the last thing we want to do at 11 o'clock at night. First of all, we'll find up waking our kids up by doing
that. Yeah, like all we're going to do is sit there or lie in bed and be stressed because we're like, oh, are the kids going to wake up? Are these kids going to wake up? We're not going to make a big fuss about it.
It's a critical issue for people with kids. You know, if your kids wake up, particularly if they're really little, it really can ruin the entire night and the entire next day.
Yeah.
Now, I can think of a great campground we stayed at where I would just, we've returned to this campground. We love this campground where quiet hours were not enforced one night at all. And actually at about 11 o'clock, someone fired up their chainsaw. Do you remember this?
Yeah, wow.
And I guess they had run out of firewood and, you know, the camp store was closed. So, hey, you know.
They arrived late. They had to run out of firewood.
I say.
They pulled in probably 9 o'clock at night.
They needed some firewood and just happened to have that chainsaw with them. In the back of the truck,
yeah.
And they cut down a portion of a tree.
Yeah, they
did. For firewood.
They did. A whole side of the tree came down. It was unbelievable to watch. We kept thinking, are they really doing this? Are they going to do the whole, like, just branch after branch?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I think that dad was the leader of a Boy Scout group as well.
I don't know. I try to block that trip out of my head. It's one of our few that I just can't even come to grips with.
Yeah, so campground owners, if you're going to have quiet time hours printed and listed on your website, please enforce them. And Stephanie, what are your ideal quiet time hours?
But that wasn't the only campground that we were ever dealing with chainsaw.
Yeah, we did have another chainsaw.
There was another chainsaw incident. So I'm thinking
we weren't camping in Texas either.
We've been RVing for 5 years.
Two chainsaw incidents.
And we've had two chainsaw at night incidences. This might go on more frequently than you would imagine.
I honestly just think it's probably really hard to have either, you know, as the owner or an employee, to have somebody at 11 o'clock who's working. But if you've got 100 plus people on your property,
there has to be a presence.
Somebody's got to be there.
And, you know, we stayed one time at a campground that the owner just every night, at probably around 10 or so, went around on his golf cart, not for, like, enforcing the quiet, but kind of chatting
with
people.
Like to say goodnight to everybody.
He did.
Like
he kind of said, yeah.
Sweet Mountain KOA.
He did. He kind of like pulled up and was like, hey,
a true graduate of charm school.
Yeah. And he would just kind of chat with you for a few minutes and move on to the next campsite. And in a way that is very community building, so friendly, and we really enjoy talking to him.
He literally chatted with almost everybody.
But there's a subtle sort of way that communicates, I'm here.
Right.
We're turning in for the night. Like, right. We're sort of wrapping it up, folks.
And I don't think his point at all was to subtly say, hey, no, get quiet,
because he wasn't. But it's right. Just saying, like, you know, things are wrapping up and I'm here on my golf cart.
He came down to it. He came over to our campfire and sat around for a while.
Yeah, he did.
And chatted with us
for
15 to 20 minutes. A really great campground owner at the Twin Mountain KOA.
Yeah.
Okay. So our last tip number 8, is perhaps the most important because it's about safety. We think that campground owners and their staff should tell every single person that checks in that they need to drive slowly around the campground.
Under
5 miles an hour or less.
Yeah, some of the campgrounds, my favorite, have a posted speed of 3 miles an hour.
Or at the Lincoln Woodstock KOA, the big sign that says, go children slow.
Yeah, I love that.
Which you took a picture of for Instagram.
I did. I put that on Instagram. I thought that's a great sign, go children slow. It's a whole other kind of slow.
Go zero if you can
go
do
zero.
It. And this is a safety issue. And I'll tell you, I'm going to have to tell you truthfully, when we first started camping, we pulled into a campground in Vermont, and I was going too fast. And a mother just started berating me and screaming at me. And I instantly knew I was wrong. And I knew I was driving too fast. But we were new to the RVing thing. We just didn't really know campground culture
yet. We had
yet.
Probably stayed on a handful of campgrounds at that point.
Yeah, but I instantly realized, yeah, you know what? There's like 50 kids here. Mm-hmm. And as you know, if you have kids dart around. Yeah. They're unpredictable.
Well, kids view campgrounds as really huge playgrounds.
And they should.
And that's what we love about them. I mean, kids just, you know, especially you're camping with another family, they're across the way. Kids view that it's like they're running back and forth across the street in a communal area. So you need to roll through. Now, you can do that in a couple ways. You can put it in your list of rules. You can post signs. But I truly believe in all these years later, I think if all people were checking in and those, you know, campground owners, those workers behind the desk looked at people and said, like, you have to understand.
This is a nice way.
Yeah. We love our children here at this campground. We take their safety safely. Please roll through the campground.
Yeah, we drove through the Bar Harbor campground this summer. We didn't stay there, but we drove through. And there was a sign that it was about the size of a movie screen that said, you know, we love our children at this campground. We really need you to drive really slow.
It's worth making. I think it's worth making that extra statement and going above and beyond to make that safety requirement at your campground.
And it's a cultural thing. Like when you get used to campground culture, you realize there's kids everywhere. They're darting all over the place. And I just think that's a little bit of education for people as they, particularly new RVers, and now that cabins are getting so big. Right,
there's people on campgrounds that don't necessarily
are new to the whole experience.
Yeah, understand. And just like you needed a good finger wagging, like, you know, we've talked about this before.
And it doesn't have to be the finger wagging. It could just be saying, hey, you need to slow down, you know.
Yeah.
But we really think this is important. So, look, we want to thank all the campground owners as well, okay? We love camping. We love RVing. We've met so many great campground owners who work so hard to provide a magical experience for their customers. And more often than not, we find that campground owners are just really fun, social people. And that's why they got into the business in the first place. So,
hard workers with the gift of gab.
Yeah. Yes, we hope you enjoy. What are 8 tips for campground owners?
So one of the questions that we get asked a lot by, you know, friends and people that read our blog is, how do we make weekend trips work? Like, are weekend trips really worth it? Are they really fun when you have to pack everything, get everything ready for the trip, and then go and then come back and get ready for the work week? I particularly hear this question from my working mom friends who are like, wait a minute, I do everything on the weekend to get ready for the week. How do you manage to travel? And that is a very valid question that we've kind of had to work through traveling, because we have to travel on weekends if we want to do as much camping as we like to do.
We bought the RV and we obviously travel a ton in the summer, but We want to do weekend trips in the spring and in the fall.
And we love fall and spring camping.
I think at this point I have to confess that I would probably take the RV out every single weekend if...
But that doesn't happen. And it will never happen.
And it wouldn't work for our family.
And it would go against one of the rules that we have, which is one of the ways we manage weekend trips is we never, even in the fall when we really love fall camping, we never do... 2 weekends in a row.
Yeah, that just does not work for us.
We've done it before, and it got crazy because it was so just...
It becomes exhausting.
Yeah, we couldn't, like, get everything back on track from the one trip to be able to get ready for the second trip.
Right.
So that's one of the ways we do it, is we try to spread it out a little bit more so we can get everything together and then, like, sort of nicely prepare for the next trip. Another thing that I've learned is I... grocery shop the one weekend before. So like a whole week before we leave, I actually do my meal planning for that next weekend during that grocery shop. So I don't have to grocery shop during the week or like on Thursday night or whatever. I don't have to throw that in. Yeah. So I kind of make it so I do kind of a big trip and I do some freezing or some meal planning.
One of the great aspects of RVing is that one of the reasons you do that is that so then you can pack up the food and put it in the fridge during the week.
Yeah, we can now, we have the trailer right out in our driveway. We can walk out. When I get back from the grocery store, oftentimes we'll just bring bags. Like I try to bag it at the grocery store separately for the bags I want to bring into the camper and the bags I'm going to bring into the house. And I just bring the bags right into the camper. I can unload it and be set in that way. So that's one of the ways I do it.
And that leads me just to kind of say that we do a little bit of the packing each night during the week, wouldn't you say? So it's not like Thursday night we're going crazy packing.
No. And I'm thinking of more of like the things I take care of, like the woman's work. Like with the laundry, I do the same thing. When I'm doing the laundry that weekend, I actually put aside the weekend clothes like for the next weekend for the boys. And then I know like these are the clean clothes. There's plenty. They're all set for next weekend. I kind of like put them to the side. I could walk it out to the camper at that point too. I usually don't. I usually just put it to the side in their closet and know that I'm all set with that. I'm not going to be doing like trip laundry during the week. So that's like the grocery shopping and the laundry aspect of things, which is quite frankly overwhelming during the week when you're working, getting kids to school and
everything
like that.
Particularly when you're doing that fall camping in September when the school year's also just recently started.
Yeah, it's a lot. September can be a lot to adjust to, but we never want to miss out those like magical September weekends. So it's worth it. Besides that, another thing that I also do is that Thursday night, I mean, I do kind of dig in and I try to do sort of what I like consider my chores for the weekend. So like I said to one of my friends who asked me one time, like, I don't understand how you're doing this. Like, how are you going to go back to work on Monday? And I said, look, I'm going to work really hard on Thursday night. And I'm going to dig in and do a bunch of stuff on Thursday night and it'll be worth it because I'll be sitting on the beach.
In Cape May.
Right.
Yeah, or we'll be kayaking on the Brandywine River.
Right. And it will be worth it, but it takes a little effort. You just have to figure out where that effort is worth it to pay off. Now, another thing we do is we come back by 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday.
We do tend to leave a bit earlier on Sunday than you might think.
For nap time, really.
I mean,
that's basically what we do is we get into the car by 1 or so to come home. And sure, you can want to like squeeze every last hour out of the day and add another activity. We're here.
Like
we may as well enjoy it.
Like the time you had to stop at the Philadelphia Zoo with the pop-up camper behind the truck, right?
I don't even remember.
We had to park in Philadelphia. I drove through Philadelphia with the pop-up camper behind the truck and we parked in the parking lot of the Philadelphia Zoo.
Were we fine?
It was about a 28-point K-turn to get out of the parking lot.
and we loved it. Every minute of it.
So are weekend trips worth it for RVers?
I think they are. But I think that you have to know what your limit is. Like, you have to know how you can do it and still enjoy it. So for us, it means coming back by 3 o'clock in the afternoon so that we can get our laundry done and everything for the week and we don't feel, like, stressed or hassled going into the week.
There's another thing worth mentioning, too. I remember when we first started the blog 4 years ago, one of your earliest posts was about how you like to skip the holiday weekends, like Memorial Day and Columbus Day weekend. Now, why did you used to feel like those were weekends that you shouldn't camp or RV?
Well, we've spent time in traffic.
We've spent lots of time in traffic.
We had a weekend. Oh, it was probably...
We went to Cape May.
Yeah, to Cape May on Memorial Day weekend. And here we are driving north on the Garden State Parkway on Monday in bumper-to-bumper traffic with two 13-month-olds.
Yeah, so like, for a while we really said no holiday weekends. But we've changed our tune on that, have we not?
Well, I still have pretty strict rules about where we can go.
Right, but we do look for those three-day weekends a lot
right.
more.
So
there's
now
a huge
we do.
Difference. There's a huge difference between the three-day weekend and the two-day weekend.
We love the three-day weekends now. We understand the value. We love being able to, like, get settled in a place, that
right.
extra day. It's not so rushed. But I'm pretty strict about what direction we go in. Like, you know, I know that this fall you were saying you wanted to go to the Catskills
right.
for a three-day weekend. And I was like, we cannot drive north through the city traffic on
yeah,
a three-day
and
weekend.
I think you were right. I called a buddy who works up that way and knows that area well. And he's like, Stephanie is right. You're crazy. You do not want to be driving.
I didn't know you called somebody.
I did.
Double checking
I got extra verification. And Will, my buddy Will said, you're crazy. You do not want to be driving to the Catskills
yeah,
Friday
said,
night.
Every single person is leaving the city on that three-day weekend.
So we go west.
Yeah.
To
so
Pennsylvania.
We have found that we can go west out like 195 in that direction.
Delaware River.
And we can enjoy a nice three-day weekend without sitting in traffic, which really can ruin. It can ruin
oh,
all
totally.
Of
it's such a short
fun.
Time anyway.
Sure.
Now, you know, we also really always say we wish we had a great campground that was about half an hour. We're in central New Jersey, and just all of our favorite campgrounds are like 2 hours away
and,
at
and
least.
And kind of like 2.5.
Yeah. So if you live in a location where you have good campgrounds that are 20 minutes, half an hour away, going for that RVing weekend is a mm-hmm. no-brainer to me. I mean, I would definitely go every other weekend in the spring and fall.
Yeah. And the last thing that I really like to do and that I would recommend as a tip is to find the meal that you can make ahead for that Friday night when you arrive at the campground
right.
that is no cook. Like
no cook, absolutely.
We've had the situation where we're like pulling in to the campground and before we get there, we're looking for a place to get takeout. Or we get there too late and I had planned on making something.
And it just stresses
and
out
it
the
is.
Whole
it's
situation.
It's stressful. So instead, what I like to do are meals that can be served like room temperature, cold, whatever. We've even done sandwiches. Like sometimes we get cold cuts and everything, which
right.
we don't normally have. So it's
sure.
kind of a little bit of a treat. And we make sandwiches when we get there.
So it's a quick and easy dinner.
One of my favorites is pasta salad because I can make that double earlier in the week
right.
and then just have it in the refrigerator and pack it up and everybody can eat the cold pasta salad when we
yeah.
get there. One time a friend of mine came with us and she did sausages, like, you know, the cold chicken sausages.
Delicious and worked perfectly.
In like tortillas, like fajitas,
right.
kind of like cold fajitas.
Yeah, that meal
and they
planning
were good.
For Friday night I think is really essential.
Mm-hmm.
Like on the guy side of the things, there's just a lot of shortcuts when you're doing that weekend trip and I might not put out the carpet. I might not set up the grill. You know, you just think of ways that you can kind of save a little bit of the prep time.
Yeah, scale it back, both in packing and in cleanup.
Yeah, scale it back and then have a great weekend.
Mm-hmm.
For this week's campground review, we want to talk about Moorings RV Resort in Belfast, Maine. Now, this past August, we went to Maine for 12 days, and we really decided fairly late in the game that we were going to go on this trip. Right, Stephanie?
Well, yeah, we weren't planning on going anywhere. And then we got another job for Jayco for their blog. And it was like
2 weeks before, even 10 days or a week before.
Yeah, and we really wanted to go there.
We wanted to go there, and also because we were going and doing these writing assignments, we wanted to be able to take pictures of the camper with the water in the background. So
we wanted to stay in, like, phenomenal places.
Yeah, we wanted waterfront sites in Maine in August mm-hmm. and with only a week's notice. So this was quite a challenge for me in terms of the planning. And what basically happened was I found myself on the phone calling places every day waiting for cancellations because everything's booked in Mid-Coast Maine and Acadia.
We've done that before,
yeah.
like in Cape Hatteras, and we've
good
gotten
tip
great.
For our listeners, you know, you can often get cancellations. So I was calling Moorings RV Resort maybe 4 or 5 days in a row because I had heard good things about Moorings on RV.net and heard that there was spectacular water views, particularly if you had the, what they call their oceanfront sites. So on day 4 or 5, it was bingo. I got a cancellation and we got a waterfront site at Moorings. It was water and electric, not a full hookup site, but the views were stunning and they were everything.
Yeah, we looked at pictures on the website and we were just like,
all the beauty and romance of mid-coast Maine.
Right, and we love Maine. So, you know, it's easy to kind of get us into this, like, romantic
Maine. Well, I'm so glad you mentioned the pictures, because they had, I think, a professional photographer.
That had stayed there one time, we heard.
They had, like, a really good set of pictures on their website. So if you want, you know, go to Mooring's website.
And you'll want to go there.
And look at that slideshow of those photos.
Now, this was a stretch for us, because we looked at the campground, and we saw that it wasn't the campground that we typically stay at based on our comfort level with having 3 young kids.
Yeah, there was not much, and they're not trying to hide this fact on the website. Mm-hmm. There's just really not a lot in terms of amenities, in terms of playground, in terms of activities.
They have a little playground, but it's a backyard playground. It's the same kind of playground that your neighbor has in their backyard.
It would be a very nice playground if it was in your backyard.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, the campground was very stripped down. The camp store was very stripped down.
Nothing in their camp store. No food or anything.
And there weren't really formal activities for the kids at all.
No activities.
But the interesting thing is, we didn't care.
No.
We ended up loving and adoring this campground.
Right.
Why was that the case?
Well, first of all, it had direct water access. So
to the Penobscot Bay.
Right. And so we were able to always go down with the boys and just be along the water, collecting rocks. And
when the tide goes out, it's you can huge walk. There's
tidal
a lot
pools.
Of room to walk in. There's tidal pools.
Lots of room to explore. We also had our kayak with us, so we could at will bring our kayak out,
the
paddle around.
Was the best kayaking we've ever had at a campground.
Our boys, our older boys, our 5-year-olds, are now at the age where we're putting them in the kayak with us. We're going on little longer rides with them, exploring a little
bit
more.
You and I both took turns doing some pretty long kayak rides with the boys out into the Penobscot Bay.
And it's so nice to do that at the campground because, you know, everybody else is just back at the campsite doing whatever. You know, you're not in a rush to get back.
Sitting up at the campsite, I could see you and Theo out there on your kayak ride. You went for a really good long kayak ride.
We did. It was phenomenal.
And we could wait down on the beach for you, too. It was very gentle down there. It was a great place for the boys to swim.
Mm-hmm.
The water was warm and clean, and so you could go out for your kayak ride with one of the boys, and I would just sit there and wait with the other
two. I think the point of that is that if you have a water element like that at a campground,
you
don't need anything else.
Yeah.
And we're born and raised on the beach, so we understand that very well. Like, if you have access to water, like, that's endless fun. So, now, did the boys still want to run up the hill to the playground that was at the top?
And they used it.
Every day.
Great view from that playground, too.
They love that. Now, they had Adirondack chairs up there, and you could sit
and just soak in that view.
Have one of the most phenomenal views ever.
It's possibly the best view we've ever had. And the campground is, would you say it's terraced? It's sort of on a slope down towards the water?
Right, so it is. And there's a whole open space in the middle that isn't really sort of developed.
Like maybe a tent camping space.
Right now, and you could see that. I mean, you could have, like, bocce ball courts there.
Yes,
or,
and we heard a lot of talk. We heard a lot of talk from some of the regulars that there are new owners there who do want to make it a more kid-friendly campground and make it more family-friendly, which could turn this, you know, pretty great campground into a world-class campground if they decided to do that.
And that might be true. But I have to say, there was a wonderful quality to staying at a place that didn't have all the bells and whistles that
That's
we
true.
Normally like. And yet, we were really perfectly happy. We
the
were
boys
surrounded
were never bored.
By... No. We were surrounded by a city, Belfast, that we loved.
Belfast is very close, 5-minute drive.
Yeah.
And there was lots of fun stuff for the kids there.
And great food everywhere. We ate a lot.
So much good
food.
Beautiful walk on the docks in Belfast.
Mm-hmm.
3 or 4 really great bookstores in town.
Couple toy stores.
Oh,
those little independent toy stores with really creative stuff.
The Belfast Co-op for food.
Yeah. Which we returned to a few times.
Yeah, and the playground at the campground wasn't great, but the Belfast City Park had a stunningly beautiful
Right. One of those playgrounds that sort of tries to meld into the landscape and sort of build into the side of hills. Oh, sure. It's very visually pleasing. And that's like a new thing in, you know, some cities in their playgrounds.
Yeah. And it's to some degree just the fact that the campground didn't have a good playground didn't matter that much because you just take a short drive into town.
Pristinely clean bathrooms.
Yes,
you have to mention the bathrooms always.
And we have not even mentioned one besides the view, second to the view, the other incredible highlight of this campground.
What, the restaurant?
The restaurant. There is a restaurant on the grounds of the campground called Papa J's, and it's actually a famous restaurant. It's one of the best restaurants in Belfast. Stephanie, why don't you tell everybody about that meal we shared?
Well, it was just, it was a phenomenal restaurant. I mean, we walked from the camper
All the way up, not very far.
It's just up the hill to the top of the campground. And we sat and we had...
a cozy restaurant, warm, inviting.
Scallops that I could probably eat every single day for the rest of my life. Perfectly done scallops.
They were perfect scallops.
We also did like a surf and turf kind of a meal.
The steak was tender and delicious. Mm-hmm.
And they were known for their steak, so we ordered one specifically knowing that.
And it was awesome.
But they also have all the traditional lobster and everything like that.
And they give a 5% discount to campers. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an interesting story there. The owner of the restaurant used to own the campground. He used to own both, but he sold the campground. And he now just owns the restaurant.
And he's a chef. He was doing all the cooking.
Also a published author. He's a really interesting guy.
A real character.
Yeah, a real character.
Mm-hmm.
A real
was around leader. The campground a lot while we were there.
Yeah, a real fun guy to talk to.
Mm-hmm. And we had a lovely waitress.
All the waitresses were lovely.
Very friendly. And she said that everybody loves the lobster pizza. We did not have the lobster pizza, but so she said that that was one of
their... Is that a good enough reason to go back next summer?
I have a hard time even imagining ever ordering lobster pizza, but I suppose...
Yeah. Now, Stephanie and I...
You have to do what you have to do.
Stephanie and I love Acadia National Park. It's one of our favorite places on Earth. But Mid-Coast Maine is also just truly one of our favorite places.
Well, it's Independence City after, like, small, little...
Lincolnville, Camden, Rockland,
everyone has their own unique style and personality. Yeah. There's just a little bit something different about each one, and they each have their own charm. And so you can, it's not like you feel like you're going to the same city over and over again.
Yeah.
When you go to Camden or when you go to Rockland, when you go,
they're very different,
but they're all
beautiful.
This perfect mix between sort of urban and outside.
Yeah, but it's really the heart and soul of coastal Maine in those towns along the beach there.
We've enjoyed every year.
We could go back again and again. And Moorings RV Resort is in a great location right by Belfast. It's a highly recommended campground.
I can't wait to go back.
Yeah, we will definitely go back to Moorings RV Resort. For this week's recommendation, we'd like to point you towards YouTube for a 10-minute tour of a new model that's coming out. It's the Shasta Airflight, and it's a reissue of the original 1961 Shasta Airflight. So it's a new addition to the growing line of retro models that the industry is putting out. The tour is led by Mark Lucas, who's the CEO of Shasta, and he's actually kind of a really cool, fun guy, and he gives this really entertaining walkthrough of the unit, along with a lot of the history of the original unit, and he gets into sort of the nuts and bolts of the construction, but in a kind of a humorous, fun way. Now, a couple episodes ago, we talked about the new Winnebago Braves, which are all the rave right now in the RV industry.
And we're really excited about
We really are excited by this retro movement, and a lot of people are. So why do you think it's capturing the imagination of the RV buyer out there, young and old?
Right. So I don't know enough about it to say for how many years, right?
But for a long time.
For a long time. Okay. There's been animals and swirls.
Swooshes and swirls and animals jumping over streams.
Like going fast, you know? Like, hey, you can jump over mountains fast and you can fly in this camper. And all of these really ridiculous airbrushed images of what you're supposed to achieve
like
in an RV.
It's borderline Nike swooshes and swirls. And you see it over and over again and it's just getting boring.
Well, okay, so and then for all of that time, there was really only one option if you wanted
That's right.
that more classic
the Airstream.
Yeah. Right. So, and
it's like it's to some degree the only cool brand out there.
That was the cool brand.
And I think Winnebago's changing the game on this.
Regardless of how cool we are, the Airstream was not an option for us because it doesn't have a layout, a floor plan
that would
work for us as a family. There's not the slide outs or whatever.
And let it be said, the Shasta is also a small unit, not really meant for a family, but a cool unit.
So we were never really like, oh, we should get an Airstream. Even though every picture that we've ever seen of an Airstream, we're like, oh my gosh, they're so beautiful.
They are.
And when we were whenever we go in Airstreams at
gorgeous.
RV shows, we just kind of swoon.
I always complain as someone who takes a lot of the pictures that it's like people who own Airstreams, it's just not fair because every picture they take is beautiful.
It's easy
my Airstream
to get a beautiful
on the
picture.
Highway, my Airstream near the beach, and every picture looks like this amazing picture by a professional photographer. Meanwhile, that's not the case. It's just because they own an Airstream.
It's just a beautiful camper. So that was the one gig in town for a long time. And now all of a sudden, some of these other companies have been like, hey, we can tap into this desire for sort of a much more stylish design.
It's nostalgia for the boomers, but it's also hip and cool for millennials and Gen Xers.
Well, and we all like, millennials and Gen Xers, we all like cleaner lines. We don't like as many curved, lines and everything. We do like that. So I guess they realized, hey, these people are coming into the market, which we are, and they're not really thrilled
with the design,
that's out there. So finally, I guess it came to a tipping point and some design changes happened. But we just have like so much excitement going through these.
It's true. And I really think one day we'd like to put out a retro model that has a bunkhouse in it or bunk beds in it, and we might be the first ones in line.
Well, because we love the RV lifestyle. We have never thought, wow, RVs look so hip.
That's the great irony of the RV industry, people, is that RVing is all about the romance of the road, and it's about Jack Kerouac, and it's about John Steinbeck, and it's about the American highway. And then yet, meanwhile, these RVs, the design is so stuffy and dull and conservative when it's really such an exciting product. Mm-hmm. So we see the industry turning a corner here, and we love
it. It's fun.
Yeah, I think that every manufacturer needs to be coming out with some of these cool, funky retro units. So check out this 10-minute video. Just go to YouTube and type in Shasta Airflyte, AIRFLYTE, and you'll just get this great ten-minute tour. And I'm telling you, it's a really hip-looking unit. And I think if the quality is good, Shasta might have a home run on their hands here.
So this week we offered our suggestions for campground owners, and we also reached out to our readers and asked them what their suggestions were, and we got some pretty great responses.
Yeah, we really did, and they kept rolling in right up to the last second here. Joe wrote in and said that Jellystone in Delaware had hundreds of 2-foot styrofoam building blocks. The kids played with them till they couldn't walk anymore. Even at night with headlamps on, they built obstacle courses. Nothing made me happier as a dad than hearing my 8-year-old saying, last night was epic. Simple, but genius. Joe also added a few other things, and he had some other great stuff here. He suggests live music at the campground, the owner visiting the site saying hello, always give me ice cream, I like that one, sell homemade pies on the campground, have kickball or wiffle ball games, more buddy sites, I love that one, Joe, we love buddy sites too, an archery range, hiking and canoe tours, and environmental shows for the kids. He says, I'll stop now, but I could go on and on.
And Norm said outside wash sinks for dishes for people who tent and have pop-ups, or if you have a large object that doesn't fit in their sink. And I totally agree. I actually still use the wash bins all the time at the bathhouses.
Right. Well, JP agreed too. He wrote outside sinks, as Norm mentions, clean, really clean, super clean restrooms and showers. And that is such an important thing for campers. They really want those clean showers and restrooms.
One of the first things that's mentioned in a campground review.
It is, over and over again, for good or for bad. And showers for those of us who don't use the shower or toilet. He says these are two reasons why they loved Atlantic Oaks. And yes, that's absolutely why we also loved Atlantic Oaks. Very clean. JP also said level sites, enough room to reverse into back-end sites, well-kept interior roads, good directional signs with addresses that will work with the GPS.
And Robert said, make sure you have a healthy power grid and your power pedestals are in good repair. And we like that one because, yes, we have had ones that blew out and the fuse blew, like,
absolutely, all the time. Yeah, they kept tripping and we just had to keep it going out and setting them up. So that's true, too. That's a fundamental. Ashley wrote in and said, campground activities during the week. I know that most people camp on the weekend, but there are many of us that camp during the week, too, especially in the summer. They should have activities for the kids to do during the week, not just on the weekend. And Stephanie, we couldn't agree with that more.
Well, which is why we love the Jelly Soda Lorette.
Yeah, that activity
it was amazing
list was,
that,
there was no difference than from a Monday to a Saturday.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, so actually, great point.
Yeah, and then Nelson said, a little room between sites. I do not want to know what my neighbors are doing.
Yeah, and that's something that, look, if your sites are too crammed together, particularly on pull-through sites, when you're just kind of staring at somebody else's hookups, you're going to get negative reviews. I mean, it's just, it's sad but true. People
and
are going to complain about that.
If you have smaller sites, put in landscaping. A little landscaping goes a long way.
A little half fence or a bush or something.
The bushes, and then just that separation.
Nobody wants to look
sites
at another RV or sewer lines.
Oh, and one more. We have Polly, who she must be from the West because we don't have a lot of corrals around here. But Polly recommends corrals and horse trails and things for the kids to do. And I cannot wait, Polly, until my boys are old enough to get on the horses and do horseback riding where we visit. So that'll be really fun.
Yeah, thank you so much to all the readers that answered the camping question. And also, if you have anything you want to add, any tips for campground owners, please go to our Lively Little Campers Facebook page and drop us a note. Or if you agree or disagree with anything we said tonight, we would really love to hear from you. We've had over 1,000 downloads of the podcast so far, both on iTunes and on our website. So you're out there, listener, and we would love to hear your opinion too.
We love hearing it. And it also, I think it gives us such a perspective outside of our own, which we really like. I mean, we are definitely a family with really young children, and we love to think about how things might change as they get a little bit older.
Yeah,
and
we
how
learn
we'll
a lot from other
campers. Different opinions and perspectives. Yeah,
and getting the letters and the notes on Facebook has really been one of the most fun parts of the podcast so far.
And if you're interested in any more information about any of the things we mentioned today, everything we've talked about today with campground reviews and tips for packing for the weekend, we have all that stuff on our website in blog posts at livelittlecampers.com.
Yeah, and this is episode 5 of the RV Family Travel Atlas. If you missed any of the first 4 episodes, go over to iTunes and download them and take a listen. And if you drop us a review on iTunes, that would be great. It would help with our rankings on iTunes.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 5 of the RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And you've got to tune in next week when we give you our top 10 clothing item must-have for retro RV owners, including those bell bottoms and fringe leather vests.
Oh, that sounds great. And I'll be talking about 10 great places to hide from angry campground owners who don't like your podcast.
They're coming.
Yeah, I think there's some of them knocking on our door right now. I'm also going to give 10 great locations for potential amazing family campgrounds in central New Jersey because, Steph, we just don't have that awesome campground right by our house, do we?
Yeah, no, and it's a lot of work, so I don't think we're going to start one either.
Steph and I have talked about starting
a campground.
No, it's not going to happen. We'll just go visit campground.
We're just going.
Anyway, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a blast.
See you next week.
See you next week.